A question that like I always get asked when it comes to dating is like, when do you say that you have a chronic illness? I prefer to rip that band-aid off, but other people that I've talked to prefer to meet somebody, have common interests, and then have them kind of emotionally be attached to who they are. And then they're like, oh, by the way, I have this whole thing. And
sometimes
that's the thing that changes the relationship, which is why I say it up front.
You are listening to Sex and Chronic Illness, a shame-free conversation about chronic illness, disability, and intimacy. I'm your host, Dr. Lee Phillips. Today's episode is on dating in the public eye. I am so excited about this season. We're going to have some special guests, and I'm so excited about my first guest to kick off the season, Miss Gigi Robinson. So Gigi is a native New Yorker from New York City, advocates for Gen Z chronic illness and mental health. She is a thought leader in creator economy, explicitly focused on authentic partnerships. Gigi is known for her podcast on Spotify called Everything You Need Is Within and featured in 60 plus podcasts. Gigi is pursuing a Master of Science in Innovation, Design, Business, and Technology from USC. She has created content for many companies, including Spotify, Best Buy, Instagram, etc. In addition, she has been a guest speaker at universities, including USC, UCLA, and many more, including speaking on panels for Yahoo, Meta, Reuters, Pharma, and her campus. Hi, Gigi.
Hi, thanks for that very warm and flattering introduction. I appreciate it. I sometimes, when I hear that running back, I'm like, damn girl, when do you sleep? And then I'm like, no wonder you have sleep problems. I'm gonna be real. I got sleep problems. So
yeah, you're doing a lot, right? So I mean, you're very busy. I mean, you know, it's funny when I do podcast interviews and I read the bios and people hear it, they're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, but you're doing it. So I'm so excited just to have you on here to kick off this season because, you know, in the field of sexuality, I feel like disability and chronic illness, it doesn't get talked about enough. And so that's why I wanted to do this podcast and have guests like yourself who are advocates out there for mental health and chronic illness. And so I just want to start off by, what are you up to? What have you been up to right now? Like, what's the latest with you?
Oh my gosh. Well, quite a lot. I'm not sure when this episode's going to air, but I'm doing a lot and gearing up to do a lot for Mental Health Awareness Month, which is also Ehlers-Danlos Awareness Month. So May is definitely going to be a busy month. I have, honestly, like tomorrow, the 30th, the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th, all booked for things. Hopefully the 6th. Oh no, the 6th, I also have like a crazy day. The 7th and 8th, hopefully I can breathe a little, but then on the 9th, I've got a shoot. The 10th is my birthday.
Oh.
The 11th, 12th, I'll have a break. The 13th, I've got another shoot. Then on the 17th or 18th, I have a big event. The 19th, I might have another event. The 20th to the 22nd, I'm probably headed down to Florida for Sports Illustrated launch party. And then I have the week of the 23rd, which I think I'm going to do a fun little like girls trip with my friend in Colorado. And then I come back and go straight to my brother's graduation. And guess what? Then it's June 1st. So that's May in a nutshell for me.
That's just May. Wow. So that all great things though. That's so exciting. So I want to just start off and just talk about your journey with chronic illness. I mean, share your story with it, and then we can just go from there. And how one of the things that I know that you've talked about, and one of the things I talk about with my patients all the time in therapy, which I think is great, is this idea of acceptance and accepting where you are and how that can be powerful. Knowing that we're not always positive about things, but there is a lot of power in the present with acceptance. And I know that you've mentioned that, so I just want to hear more about it.
Yeah. So thanks again, like, for holding this kind of space. It's really, really important. And I feel like a lot of the time, chronic illness is not necessarily the focus of everything that I talk about in depth, I think. It does inform a lot of the work and the advocacy that I do publicly, but I don't talk about my nitty gritty, you know, growing up with it, being the kid left out, not people asking me what's wrong with me all the time, when quite frankly, it's none of their business. So it's just been quite a journey. So to start, I was diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome when I was about 10 years old. And something that's like super important to note about that is, you know, it was over a decade ago at this point, which like, I'm like, damn, I'm old, but I'm like, whatever. You know, I've lived with it my whole life, and I have the privilege and act of accessibility, honestly, through being in New York City, having access to the doctors at hospital for special surgery, mm-hmm. having the doctors at Cornell, at HSS, at NYU, at Mount Sinai, at so on and so forth. So those are some of the best in the world if you look it up. And I, again, feel very, very fortunate that the pediatric units there were smart enough to be like, hi, something's not right. And we know it's not in your head. We know it's not growing pains. Here's what it could be. Let's figure it out. And really the process of getting the diagnosis was just like, from what I remember of it, and you know, I was 10 years old, like I have memories, but also they're fragmented because I was a child and a middle schooler at the time. But, you know, I had stress fractured my elbow doing a cartwheel, which is like not normal. That was like the first sign. Well, the first sign was actually growing up, I had bruises all over because people with EDS get really easy bruising usually. So I would have bruising, things would take a long time to heal if I like sprained my ankle, and I just kind of shrugged my shoulders. I also was peculiarly difficult. Okay, I'm just going to say I was really, really good at doing butterfly in the water, yeah. Like on the swim team. And there's people that are just like talented, but the reason I was good was because of my hypermobility and my EDS. So that was something that, you know, at the end of the day, like that shouldn't like hurt, but it was hurting. And that was another sign. So that was early on. And one of my doctors, then after after the elbow break, I fractured my ankle. I tore my ligaments in my wrist. It, you know, took me months and months to heal. My lower back was hurting, you know, my shoulder, my elbow again. Like it was just honestly thing after thing after thing. And the doctors were like, something's not adding up. Like this all happened within 3 years. And for you to have that many injuries back to back is like really strange. So something has to be going on. So this, you know, doctor, which like, I think she's so great, I should go talk to her probably if she's still in practice, was like, Gigi, I think you need to go see this specific geneticist who knows about hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I think this is what's going on. She can probably advise you on what kind of plan of attack to do, because I was seeing a rheumatologist for it and they're like giving me medicine. Whoa, let's go. Oh, did you see that?
The dog decided to, yeah. to join.
She decided to join. Come here. I'm so sorry. This is like so crazy.
No, I love it. I love animals. It's great.
she felt the energy. She was like, I agree.
She did. She was feeling it.
But
she wanted
essentially,
to be
exactly. Like I was seeing this rheumatologist and, you know, she was she was great, but she was like, physical therapy, strengthen the core, blah, blah, blah. And like, I feel like that's the number one thing anybody with a chronic illness is told, like, oh, you're having pain because you have a weak core or a weak pelvic floor
all
or
the
a weak,
time.
You know, neck muscle.
Yes.
And it's like, I yeah. get it. Like physical therapy is great and it helps, but it is not the solution to helping people with chronic pain. And I think growing up, because I had no autonomy really over what I was being treated with or how I was being treated, which was a very holistic, medication-free environment. You know, I don't hold it to my parents, like that they just were doing the best that they could. And we didn't know about this. We were like, what's going on? And I think that's another thing that's also not talked about is like the caregiver, like the parent of, or the sibling of somebody who's struggling, not only with like a physical thing, but how does that affect everybody mentally? Like, how can we plan things differently? Are there accommodations available? So on and so forth. So that was kind of the story of growing up with it. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned before, I would have a rolling backpack in middle school. heads up, not cool in middle school. Just kidding. If you're a young person listening, like, right, rock that bag. I'm like, yeah, all for team, like, roll something. It's so much easier, mm-hmm, and like less heavy. And I just kind of really cared so much at the time about what I looked like and what people were thinking of me. And, oh, if I take the elevator, I'm sitting out in gym class and nobody can see something wrong with me. Like, what's going on? And like, then it kind of like alienates me on the side of things. So I think middle school and high school were somewhat lonely because of that. Like, I have a bunch of great friends who have been very supportive, but for some things it was a little bit lonely. And then, mm-hmm, yeah, that leads me into college, but I'll stop there.
Well, I just love what you're sharing. And what's interesting is that, you know, I see a lot of EDS in my practice, and it is very hard to diagnose. And what we find is there's all these comorbidities that come with it. So often when I have patients that have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, they also have POTS. They may also have fibro. They've got the anxiety and the depression that comes with it. And they often are bounced to so many doctors. And one of the things, you know, that's always said as well, this could be psychological. This could be functional. This is a functional issue.
I've had doctors, you know, say, you know, yeah, to my mom, she's psychosomatic. It's in her head. It's growing pains. And my mom was like, fuck you. We're right, seeing another doctor. You work for me, bitch. Like,
yeah, exactly. No, and people have done the big fuck you with that, right? I mean, because something is going on. And so you have to find the right people. And that's a journey. And what's interesting about your journey is that a lot of my patients with EDS, they get diagnosed like in their 20s or 30s. And this was so young for you. So,
I got lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it, and I love the support system that you've had, because support system is so important. And, you know, just using your voice for that, because it is such a debilitating thing that people can go through. And the one thing that you mentioned that comes up all the time is just the isolation piece. I think that's the hard piece, because, you know, people see you walking, you know, you look fine. And I think this is what comes with invisible illnesses all the time. And people don't, they don't understand, right, until you're around other people that can specialize in something or your support system. And so I just love, you know, that you were able to have that and then continue on your journey with it. And now using your voice with the community and everything that you're doing. So tell me a little bit about going to the college years a little bit, with your journey.
Yeah, I would say, back to what you just said about that support system and having that, those people, my family and like my friends who understood, and like, I could say, oh, I'm going to a doctor's appointment. They'd be like, okay, cool. Or like, let me know how it goes. Or like, let's like FaceTime after. Cause you know, we're in the age where like FaceTiming is just becoming cool to like casually FaceTime a friend. Like, we're talking 2012 to 2016 is like high school. So going from that to flying across the country for college at USC to be completely isolated, to also have to start over with all these new doctors. I needed a rheumatologist, a cardiologist, a neurologist, an ophthalmologist, a gastroenterologist, a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, not regular, but like a psychotherapist or a CBT therapist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like eight, there were more too than I'm talking
about
here.
Yeah.
Like, and a pain doctor and a migraine doctor.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm, over 10 different doctors that I needed to just find and like do and like go and have these meetings with by myself and be able to articulate what I was feeling. Right. And like, that was something that was also like empowering. Like, I don't want to say I made it easy for them, but they were kind of like, oh, it's this young person coming in here. We normally deal with older people, because we have this, like, I think, misconstrued like view on society that if you're young, you can't be sick, or like, right, you're too young, you can't be in pain. That was like what I've been told like literally my entire life. And I'm like, mm-hmm, who are you to tell me that?
Yeah. Right.
So being out in LA was hard, and I would FaceTime my mom into the appointments, and you know, my mom would like be on her lunch break or like sit in, and it was kind of like having her there. But then also on top of that, like, my parents would fly, they flew in like two or three times, and we like would it was for like parents weekend or move-in, and we would try to schedule a doctor so that it like lined up and I wasn't alone. Cause like getting your blood drawn or going to an MRI or getting an x-ray or any kind of procedure done or scan is just like beyond frustrating and isolating. And something I really struggled with, aside from my main struggle with the academics, like academics is one, but social is another. And social was something that I think, again, because it was invisible, nobody understood. And I was not speaking about it with other students. I was talking about it with my teachers or with like my mentors, but not students. So when I had to go to appointments, people were like, oh, I'll come with you. And then I would kind of take it a little bit personally, you know, if they didn't come with me, because I expected somebody says they're going to come with you. I expected that to mimic what my parents did. They would come with me. And you know, I'd never had a friend come with me, which is like, I think maybe kind of normal. Like, I don't know how many friends go to other people's doctors, but like, if you're really struggling and you're alone and like, you don't have a support system, I think that's where friends can really be there for you. And absolutely. I just struggled a lot with like, I'll be there for you, and then having them not be there. And then also taking it personally, kind of thinking the world revolved around me a little bit, like being a little like, this is my issue. And like, as a friend, you should support me. And honestly, not fully honoring like what other people might go through. Like I was like, trust me, I understand. Like I'm willing, like I would go with you. But then it like, it was always kind of like, it was not like a, it didn't make sense. And I think that was also a maturity thing. So that was kind of challenging with social life and also with dating, which we can get into separately.
Oh yeah. We're about to get into the juicy stuff in a minute. But
oh boy. Oh boy, mom, dad, don't listen to this. No, grandma, if you're listening, shut
grandma,
it
off. Don't
now.
Listen. Don't listen to the Sex and Chronic Illness podcast. But you know what? I love what you said. The thing of it is that, you know, with several different diagnoses, you have to have a village, right? So all these doctors, which can become very overwhelming. So one of the things that I do is a therapist that specializes in chronic illness, which there's not many of us out there. You know, yeah, we actually will sit down with our patients and help them literally write a list of the questions that they want to ask doctors, because when you go in, you're just so damn overwhelmed. You don't even know where to start, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is that something too. That is hard. And even I sometimes like, I try to keep a mental bank, but I really need to have that journal. Like people like when dietitians say have a food journal, for me, that's a little triggering also because of like the whole situation of I have a really messed up GI system, but also I have eating disorder habits and I, you know, going on a diet or the word of diet or, you know, a regimen is a fancy word of saying diet.
The regimen. That is very fancy.
Yeah.
the word diet. It's a bad word. Diet's a bad word.
Right. So then like having a notebook that's like, you know, like it's hard to like track what you're eating and see how you're feeling after, and then show that to your doctor and then have your doctor critique what you're eating and make you feel bad kind of about like, you're maybe eating the wrong things and that's why you have more pain. It's like, there's studies that show that eating meat and eating dairy and, you know, things like that are more processed are going to inflame your body. Like, it's just like, that's science, the science of the gut. And doctors know that. And when I talk to them about it now, they're like, yeah, makes total sense. Keep doing what's working, get the foods out that don't work. And it's like, yes, that's individual, but at the same time, why are they not disclosing that to more people? Like, it almost seems like they don't, like they're gatekeeping, like a secret from a lot of us. So I find that interesting.
That happens all the time.
I myself don't have a journal.
Right. Yeah. My patients talk about that all the time. They will talk about different experiences with the doctors that they're having, how one doctor will say this, one doctor will say that. And often, you know, it's so many cooks cooking in the kitchen and it becomes, you know, very overwhelming, but also very empowering, the fact that you can go in there. You know, there's the stereotype that when you see usually the woman walking into the doctor's office with her notebook of her history, doctors tend to like back up a little bit. It's like they get nervous about that, because then there's this assumption that, okay, well, she's probably been fired by certain doctors, or she never got the answers that she needed, so now she's come to us, or maybe she's med seeking. And what I find is that It's just people trying to take care of them damn selves, and they want to make sure that the doctor is getting all of the information that's needed to help with their care.
Yeah, so, I wish that more people had that perspective.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So now I want to talk about dating. How's that been?
If you can tell by my face, it's been hard. And I mean, also, like, before we go into dating, I will also say my journey with, like, you know, academics and like being a student outside of friendships was extremely challenging for me because I, again, didn't know how to articulate the right things and stand up for myself and say, no, I have this accommodation. It's registered with the Disability Office of Accessibility, right? You can't tell me no. You can't. It's literally my medical right. Like, you, this is not okay. And if you want to go to the dean about it, I'm so fine to go and explain, and I'll bring my medical history. And a couple of the projects that I made in college, literally, like, I literally ordered all of my scans and I cut them up and collaged them together into a piece. And the doctor was like, when I was explaining it to the class, the students and the teachers were like, oh, like, what do you mean? Like, where, like, that doesn't make any sense. There's no bones here. Like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh, did you look at it, like, up close? Because, like, oh, that's a bone right there. And she, like, literally the jaw drops. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, exactly. Oh yeah, give me an A. Thanks. Right. Okay. Bye. Yeah. I wasn't faking it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, another time I went and photographed people in a support group that also lived with Ehlers-Danlos and POTS and mast cell. And, you know, that was empowering to have all of the, like, 45 different photos of different people and come in to the classroom and show the teacher and have the teacher start crying because she realized she was being such a dick to me. I was like, thank you. And then the
that is empowering
petitioning. Yeah. And it was a little bit nerve wracking. I mean, when I sometimes, like, have to do confrontations, my chest will get all red, like, thanks mast cell. And, like, sometimes, like, my ears will get really, really red. And so that would happen. And I remember that feeling of anxiety. And the first point for me was with my two capstone teachers, and they were just not into me exposing the world of chronic illness because I had already done it. And I said, I don't really care if I've already done it. This is what I want to do when I graduate. I'm going to be a full-time advocate. I need to have this in my portfolio. It's something that's important to me as an artist, as an advocate, as a student. This is my thesis. You're mentoring me. You work for me. I pay for school for you to work for me. That's what I'm doing.
Love
I
didn't say it. That,
but wow. That's, like, the attitude. Yes. And they ended up, like, I literally broke down, like, full on panic attack because I couldn't even get my words together. And after that, I wrote a very succinct, like, 3-page, you know, email, as in, like, a 3-page single space Word doc, that was petitioning to get a new teacher because I was like, this is not an environment I want to be in, especially when I'm already struggling. So I sought out the help from other teachers that were very supportive, understood the health, you know, constraints, were flexible with me, you know, straying a little bit away from the assignment. And that was all because of the communication. And I say that because communication is really, really key when it comes to your health, specifically chronic health. So that's just important.
Wow. What a journey with school. Wow. And advocating for yourself. No wonder why you're such a great advocate. I mean, you spent doing it in your college years, right? And you're right about communication. Communication is great. We got to do it. I always say it's one of the easiest things that we can do, but it's also one of the most difficult things that we can also do. Yeah.
Yeah. It also was something that, you know, can it, it for me, it never did, but it's something that could translate into a workplace setting. And sometimes people are scared of losing their job over asking for an accommodation that they're entitled to from their, like, accommodations from their doctors. So my advice would be to sit down with a therapist or sit down with a doctor, or after you listen to this, make a list and go to your primary care, whatever pain doctor you go to, and get your damn accommodations. And once you have that, go to whoever the HR person or the academic advisor is and ask a friend or coworker to come with you if you want somebody to hold them accountable. That's something I never did, but I wish I did, because if there's that accountability from the outside, like, they know they're being watched, you know? So, like, there's more pressure to them. Like, so I think that that is really important. And when somebody tries to cross the line, you can just reference that. You have a document of it. And if you have a record straight, nobody can fuck with you. So
exactly. It's all there, right? So that's really great advice on folks that are navigating their illness, or they're navigating on what to do when it comes to school, or, you know, what to do when it comes to their employment, right? Because, you know, as a professor, I mean, I've had students all the time that say, hey, Dr. Lee, here's my disability letter. I need this. And I'm like, okay, I got it right here in my file. You take as long as you need and just communicate with me and we are good to go, right? And it's almost like some of these students were scared to give me the letter, you know, like, here's my letter. And I'm like, it's okay. I understand. I said, actually, I specialize in chronic illness as a therapist. You're good. I got your letter.
Right. And it's really interesting. Like, why are we so scared of it? And I think it's just this idea that maybe having a disability or having an accommodation means that you are in the category of the other. And nobody ever wants to be in the other. You want to be with a community. You want to be a part of a tribe. As people, we're tribal people. We want, that's what we crave. We crave that connection in the community.
Yes.
But right. if you have something that's like a document saying, I need this, this, and this, which makes me different than that entire other group, there's this fear that you're going to be like the other. And I think part of my journey is realizing that from a young age, that one, it doesn't really matter and it's none of anybody's business. I've been a straight A student for the most part, actually A's and B's, let's be real.
Wow.
A's in art school, everything else, debatable. Anyway, different story. I did what I needed to do. And even with my business class in my master's degree, mm-hmm. my teacher had a visual impairment. And so she taught class a certain way and was like, if I thought that this would affect your academic curriculum, you know, I would not be in this position. But it was cool to have a teacher also understand. I was like, hi, I got COVID. I can't hand in this assignment right now. Can I get it to you by the end of the semester? She said, take as long as you need. Just get it to me before 10 p.m. on Thursday, April 28th. And guess when I submitted it? Last night on Thursday, April 28th at like 9:30.
Yeah.
So I was GG. Like you gotta get, be a little more on top of it. But you know what? I got it done. I got my grade. We're all mm-hmm. good. Good in the hood. And she was like, thank you. I appreciate it. And that is the kind of relationship that I think teachers should go more like, being understanding and being flexible. I'm not saying everyone's going to do that. For the most part, 85 to 90% of the people in the class are going to hand it in on the deadline. They're going to be in that one group of dedicated students. And when you have an accommodation, a big, big, big misconception that I think people see from the outside is, oh, well, you got to use your laptop. Things are so much easier. Oh, well, you get extended time. Of course, you're going to do better. You have a competitive advantage, right? So can we like debunk that? Because that's just not true. We're just doing what we need to survive, really, to get
that's why it's
it
yeah that's
and
why
manage
it's
our
called,
health on the side.
Yeah, right. And that's why it's called accommodation. I think the other fear that people have is just the ableism that's in the world. It's like, you know, I hand you this. How are you going to perceive me? Because I am someone where I can walk, I can talk. And, you know, I think that's really scary. And, you know, people, you know, they don't know a lot about ableism. There's other isms that they do. But when we talk about ableism, it's just they're like, well, what do you mean by that? And it's everywhere. It's in schools. It's in the workplace. It's in relationships. It's in friend groups. It's in families. And so, you know, holding space for that is really critical to be able to process the feelings that go into that, because, you know, there's this fear of just judgment and being shamed and all these other things that can really, you know, come up. And so I'm just really happy to hear that you've been able to be an advocate even while you're in your master's program, and to do what you need to do for yourself to get it done. So, you know, yeah, it's so important to be able to have a voice and being able to share that and being the voice for others, which, you know, you're doing such a great job of. And that's why we're having this podcast, because we need more voices.
Yes. And
yeah.
And, you know, something leading into the, you know, the juicier part of the episode is really about, I think, the emotion. And that's the difference when it comes to dating. Like,
yeah.
You can easily take your emotion, maybe not easily, but you can take your emotion out of an academic setting way easier than you can an intimate setting. With intimacy, there's obviously like hormones and there's like love language and like secrets and like sharing every detail of your life versus an academic setting. You're not necessarily going to be sharing all of that with your teacher. Like, unless we're going through some scandal, like that's not happening. So yeah, that's, I think, the biggest thing that makes things challenging, and it makes it scary sometimes even to bring things up. And something I've also been dealing with, aside from my chronic illness, but I don't drink also because of my chronic illness, because of the medication I'm on now, because my body is literally with mast cell activation. I will wake up with my eyes swollen shut. That happened on my first day of my senior year of my undergrad. And I literally was like, what is going on? Like, I literally thought I lost eyesight completely. Like, I didn't know what had happened. My eye was swollen completely shut. I was also hyperventilating and crying because I was like, I was supposed to take cute pictures on my last day of school, my first last day. And, you know, there was just like a whole moment about it. But with that, like, I don't even know how I'm getting on this tangent, but oh, why I don't drink alcohol. Right. That was just a little tangent. Welcome to living with brain fog. And
it is showing up right now. It's here.
It's showing up. Sorry, it is here. Sorry, listeners. I hope you're following. But, you know, so I don't drink. So now, like, I'll have guys like ask me, like, oh, like, you know, this one guy, he like messages me and he's like, on Raya. I don't know if you know anything about
there's
Raya.
There's so this, many like, apps. Like, is that another app?
There's so many. It's like supposed to be like more like exclusive. I don't really know if that's, I don't really like that, but like, it's honestly the same as the others. But this guy's like, oh, like I'm new in town. Like I'm from SoCal, like would love to, you know, explore the city. Like, do you have any tips? And I'm like, you know, I'm like a very blunt person. I don't know if that's because I'm a Taurus or if that's just like who I am, but you know, I'm like, oh yeah. Like, what is the vibe? Like, what are you, I don't, you know, like, are, what kind of tourism do you want? Do you want to go to the fucking top of the Empire State Building? Or do you want to go to a secret spot that nobody's been to? I mean, what? He's like, oh, like I'm looking to like explore the city with someone like yourself. Like, do you want to grab a drink? And my response is basically, you know, I'm not a big drinker, but like, let's swap it for dinner. Boom. Like, that's an easy thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, you don't have to feel weird about it. And I think anybody that really is concerned about what you're drinking usually has a bad intention to kind of get you into bed. If they're like, why are you not drinking? I'd be like, why do you care what I'm drinking? Like, are you trying to roofie me? Or like, I wouldn't ask you what you're drinking or why you drink. Right. I like to throw the question back onto them. And
good.
That's something that I think also, I mean, I'm also fine. Like once I like got into a conversation, I'm like, oh, I take medication I can't drink on. And I just don't feel the need to share that with everybody, but that's my secondary response. But it has been something that, you know, I realize some people are very, very into, and that's like their only way of meeting people.
It's so,
you know, establishing a relationship.
No, it is. And, you know, and what's very funny is that if you were to take alcohol just away, there would be like no relationships. I think relationships are so based on it. It's what drives things. And then, you know, if you don't drink, what's wrong with you? Like, I don't drink either. And I went to a restaurant with my husband the other night and the waiter comes over and he's like, cocktails? And we were like, iced tea? And he was like, oh.
Yeah. You know? I went out last week to a happy hour and the two other people I was with got like margaritas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, give me your best mocktail. He's like, why don't you drink? And I was like, I don't feel like it. And he was like, oh, why? And I was like,
it's none of your business.
Like, yeah. Like I just, at that point, I'm not picking a fight with a waiter. Like that's a waste of my time.
Right.
But when I'm like a happy hour with friends, but I just shrug my shoulders sometimes. And I just think it's really interesting because alcohol really is something that drives, you know, a lot of these relationships and emotional connections, which is kind of interesting. And I think that's why potentially maybe do people have a more challenging, rocky relationship when they are under the influence and then they realize things about their significant other and they're like, oh my God, wait, like I actually don't like them. Like alcohol was kind of like my, you know, my love colored goggles or rose colored goggles or glasses.
I used to call them beer goggles, you know, or you got the goggles on, right? It definitely causes a lot of problems. Yeah, it causes a lot of skewed judgment. I mean, it drives things where, you know, it shouldn't, and it does. So it's fueled around all kinds of relationships.
Yeah, yeah. But also, like, if you do drink, like, go you. Like, if it works for
you.
Yeah,
I mean, if you do that and that's what you love and you're, you know, good for you, you know. But everyone has their own thing, you know. And I can see where it can make dating difficult because people have the expectation or they just assume that you drink and that's what you're going to go out and do. So, yeah.
Well, especially at 23. Like, oh, I stopped drinking at 22. Yeah, like everyone in my, even on my birthday last year, which was my first like sober birthday, I, you know, we went out to a, you know, a vegan Mexican restaurant and everyone was ordering drinks except for me. And they're like, why not? Why not? Come on, like do a shot. I'm like, no, like I made it 5 months into the year. I could probably make it another, you know, 7, like whatever. Let me just like do it. So I ended up like doing it. It was completely fine. But I don't know. It's just interesting to see how it informs culture and
it does. Yeah. It drives so many things, right? Yeah, it does.
But a question that like I always get asked when it comes to dating is like, when do you say that you have a chronic illness? And on top of that, like, that's like a question I think is really important for anybody. But I will say the other thing that I deal with is the fact that I talk about it so openly as an influencer. That's what my job is. That's what I talk about. That's what I advocate for. So not only when do I tell somebody about my health conditions, but when do I also tell them about like being an influencer and like that's what I talk about. And then like, also, do I even want to talk about that when like it's informed or implied? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Like when, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I when I work with a lot of single people who are chronically ill and they want to date, they always say, Dr. Lee, when should I disclose? And I always say, you know, that's up to you because you're on your own journey. You know, sometimes if someone hasn't fully accepted the fact that they are chronically ill, they may not be ready to. There's different phases that people go through with chronic illness. If they're in this integration phase where they're integrating like things into their life and they're able to take some of their previous things into their life after a diagnosis, then they may want to say something. Often people may put it on a dating app if they want to, or they will tell someone on a first date, or they'd rather get close to someone and see if something works out. Then they can share something. So it's important to just make sure when you're at your own comfort level to be able to do that, because your journey is your journey. And, you know, that's really important to be able to share when you want to.
Yeah. And I always talk about this as well. Like, it's so subjective. It's what you feel comfortable with. Do you want to rip the Band-Aid off and get rid of somebody, you know, because they might not respect you or want, you know, something I've dealt with is somebody that's like, I don't want to deal with somebody who could potentially pass this on to like kids. Like, I don't want to be with a sick person. I don't want to be a caregiver. And I think eventually everybody becomes a caregiver. So that's kind of a bullshit excuse.
It's so true. Yeah. I mean, we're all going to have a disability usually when we get older. You know, things change in our bodies when we age, right? So you can develop a chronic illness when you get older. You can also have more pain when you get older. I mean, things are going to change for us. And You know, if you're in a relationship and you're married with someone for a long time, I mean, 9 times out of 10, one of you is definitely going to become a caregiver, right? I mean, it comes
at some point. It does. And that's something that, you know, when you're younger, I guess it's just like some people want to have fun or they want like to do all the things. And like, I totally get it. Zoe agrees. Can you see? She was like looking.
She does agree with it.
But, you know, I prefer to rip that Band-Aid off, but other people prefer to meet somebody, have common interests, and then have them kind of emotionally be attached to who they are. And then they're like, oh, by the way, I have this whole thing. And sometimes that's the thing that changes the relationship, which is why I say it up front.
Yeah, it can change it. It can change it. Someone can definitely have other feelings and say, well, this brings up fear for me. Or a lot of times they don't want to take the time to learn more about it. Where the, if they can, you know, you can still have a life when you are chronically ill. But we know that it can change the dynamic. And with you being an influencer and out there talking about it, you know, I'm sure, you know, that can be great for you, but it can also be a challenge because I could see where you could meet a guy and he could be, I don't know, a little intimidated by you with all that you do, which is fantastic.
I mean, like, that is small dick energy and I don't want that. Like, I'm not going to go. I don't really have time for that. And I would say I'm definitely a more like masculine energy kind of woman or like an alpha female. So I would need somebody who could kind of like dominate that and help me bring out my feminine energy.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
In the relationship. Yeah. And that's something like I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. So if I go out with someone, they're like intimidated by all that I do and they're not like, you know, interested in supporting or they're jealous or, you know, they say negative things like bye, ew, get away. Mm-hmm. Like that is so gross to me. That gives me the ick. Like major, like, are you kidding? Like, ew.
Right. Yeah.
Ew. I'm sorry. You already make more than I do because you're a man. Mm-hmm. Like, ew, be nice to me. Like at the very least, like what is going on with these guys? The other thing that I think is really challenging now that I don't know how much time we have left, but like you mentioned, you know, I want to talk about like Sports Illustrated. And
I do. Yes. That was a really nice opportunity that you recently had. And I want our listeners to hear about that because this goes into acceptance and, you know, diversity with bodies. And I loved it that you were able to be able to do this. So tell us about it.
Well, before I tell you about the journey, I just want to say that it's been quite interesting to also have guys start sliding into my DMs.
Oh,
specifically because I'm hot, you know,
there's that too.
And there's that. And it's like, well, I don't want to be around that either. So there's just been honestly a lot going on. That's made dating quite hard. I also live in New York City. So add that on top of it. It's not like there's a small pool of people. It's like, there's so many people and there's hustle and bustle all the time. Quite frankly, I also do not have time. Like it's like, if you have to really like chase me down, like I want to be fully pursued. Like I honestly, like I'll play into the game a little, but I'm so blunt and honest. I probably need a little coaching from you to like, make me be a little bit more like flirtatious because I am so, I'm literally so to the point where I'm like, oh, like, I guess this might not work out. Or like, if somebody's like, oh, like, you know, would you want to grab coffee? Sorry, I have an espresso machine at home. I can make a coffee at home. Like,
yeah.
Oh, do you want to go for a walk in Central Park? Sorry, I'm not a dog. Let's go do something interesting. Like those are the vibes that I, you know, give. And maybe they're a little harsh, but according to my standards, like the right person is going to hit all the boxes and not want to take me out for coffee or for drinks or for whatever. They're going to plan something fun. Like, I don't know.
I love the creativity.
Like doing an activity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I talk about that a lot with people. Like, you know, when I work with couples, you know, we talk about like, how can you get creative with your dating? Something more than just going for a walk or going to dinner, you know, like plan the evening out. You know, people love that. There's this creativity that can happen. And, you know, it sounds like for you, you know, you really want that. You want someone to come to you and say, let's do this, something that you haven't done or heard about, or they just took the time to really plan like a great evening or something or day, you know?
Yeah. But then the other thing that like is challenging with that is some people are like, well, why would I spend so much money on like someone random? And I'm like, I don't know. It's a fun experience at the end of the day. Like you can always make something positive. And I don't really know where I adopted that mindset fully. Like, because there's a lot of resilience, I think, that comes with being chronically ill and like having to deal with that all the time. Like, for example, this week, even I forgot to take my medicine like for 2 days, which was like, I had so much going on in brain fog that and like recordings in the middle of the day. So I shut my midday alarm off, which means that it didn't go off, which means I missed my medicine. And I was in so much pain. Like my parents visibly could notice, like I was acting different. And so I took it today and I was on a walk and I was like, I feel so good right now. And that's because I took the time to do some self-care and go for a walk and take my medicine and grab my coffee and, you know, spend some time outside and do some breathing, like, mm-hmm. you know, by the trees. And also, like, on the term of acceptance is like, oh, like, you have to do this in order to function. Mm-hmm. And that's another mm-hmm. thing that I think is really challenging for individuals as well as, like, you know, partners or friends.
It is challenging. Yeah, no, it is. It's taking the time to have the self-care and to have your action plan for that at times and to really look at acceptance and say, look, this is where I'm at right now. And I'm going to do what I can to take care of myself. And it's giving yourself some self-compassion. I think that is so needed. If you're having a relapse or a flare or, you know, just symptoms that are exacerbated by something, you know, so that's really critical. But I do want to talk about the Sports Illustrated now. So
that's one of my favorite things to talk about. It has been quite the journey, honestly, and like in the best way. You know, my whole concept and intuitive, I think, thought on applying to this was, what if I, you know, go through this and I win and I get to represent people that live with invisible conditions and amplify my voice? That was exclusively my prerogative. I mean, yes, like a career milestone, you know, shooting with literally my idol since I was 10 years old, since I was diagnosed, having him be the photographer on my first shoot, having like the opportunity to relate to other people and also have hundreds of people start DMing me like, oh my gosh, like I never felt more seen. Like I think those are moments where, even though the magazine's not even out yet, like I know that it's something that's going to hopefully help so many people. And, you know, I also, in the terms of body acceptance, like I didn't retouch, in my interview with them, you know, I mentioned I did get like a lymphatic drainage massage and I got a facial and a spray tan and my nails done and a wax, but like, I didn't go through any crazy workout. And something we didn't really talk about, which I'll mention, is I've had a messed up relationship with working out and accepting my body and my body image, because any time that I would try to work out, I'll overexert myself and send myself into a flare up. So I didn't push myself over the edge. I stayed completely true to who I was. I, you know, maybe I went on a walk a day or something if I could, but some of the days leading up, I did spend at home in this bed right behind me. Yeah. And I think that that's really beautiful. And I didn't go crazy with trying to look a certain way. I just showed up as I was and embraced it. And when you embrace yourself, that's like the most confident thing you can do, which just, it literally like emits, like you glow, like it's something that comes like literally from within that only you can do. And I think that that's really what this opportunity enabled me to do. And I'm just really, really excited. I also opted for no retouching on the photos. So, you know, the photos that come out will be, again, completely true and authentic. And I have some bruises going on and I've got some psoriasis and you'll see stretch marks because my weight's fluctuated, you know, because of the medicine and traveling and being home and everything. And I just think it's a really beautiful platform where, aside from me, I mean, everyone that they chose this year to be a part of the Swim Search is very diverse and represents something for women and people everywhere. And I just think that's so beautiful. And it shows you that like you can literally do anything. And it's also sharing their platform with someone like me. That just means the world, knowing that other people can finally open a magazine and be like, wow, like she's super sick. And you can't even tell, like, she's so sexy, but like, she's super sick, you know?
Wow.
And I think that that's really important. Mm.
No, this is amazing. I'm so happy that you had the opportunity to do this and you are going to inspire so many people out there by doing this. This was something that was so needed. And I'm so glad that you just went in there as your authentic self and you did this, because that's what you have to do. And it's so empowering, just like you were saying. And I love it. And I think you're fabulous. And I'm so glad we got a chance to connect and do this. And absolutely. How can people get in touch with you? Can you share with the listeners how they can do that?
Yeah. Before I say that, I just want to say one more thing, which is a lot of time I think people with chronic illness or disability hold themselves back because of PTSD or an experience or anxiety over talking to their healthcare providers or talking to a new significant other or friend about something based on a past experience. But I have kind of adopted this philosophy of like that's in the past, and you can use that to make a blueprint for that to never happen again. You have come out stronger, you're resilient, you know now how to respond to a situation like that so that you don't get hurt, so that you can advocate for yourself. And I think that me being a part of SI is teaching people that and showing them that despite what happened, you overcame it and you came out stronger. And if you've been dismissed by doctors before, like remember, they're working for you. Like you can fire them. They don't fire you as a patient. I mean, they can, but I think if you as a patient gain that control back, it can give you a little bit more authority and a little bit more, I think, direction when it comes to your health. So definitely keep that in mind. But again, this was awesome and you're so amazing. And I'm so glad we got to meet. We have to hang out when you're in New York.
Yes,
And
of course. I'll be back soon. Yeah, we'll
oh,
definitely get up and I
amazing.
mean, you told me what your May schedule is like, so maybe we'll get into like June or something together, but yeah.
Yeah, but we'll make it work. I'll make time for you, of course. But yeah, you can simply put Google my name, Gigi Robinson, ggrobinson.com, and my Instagram and all social handles are just the at symbol, the word it's, and then my name, Gigi Robinson. So at it's Gigi Robinson. But again, thank you. This was so fun.
Ah, it was so fun. Wonderful. Thank you for being here. I so appreciate it. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sex and Chronic Illness. If you'd like to learn more about Gigi and her work, check out the links in the description. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Sex and Chronic Illness on your favorite podcast player. Leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and follow me on social media. My handle is Dr. Lee Phillips. Thanks to Jason Herderick, who helped put this episode together. Our theme music is Funky Soul Intro by Andy Slaughter. Stay well, everyone, and as I always say, get curious about your partner and get creative with your sex.